I got a gentleman coming up to speak now who's who's been quite a fun gentleman to know. I've known since, when did we meet, Father? 2009?
Detroit.
That was 2009. I was lucky enough at that time to still be a smoker. Had I not been a smoker, I wouldn't have met the man. Because the gentleman's a cigar smoker, and it takes a long time to sit outside and smoke a cigar. So I came outside to have a cigarette or two and met him having his half-hour cigar. And we chatted and chatted and chatted and talked about things and all kinds of things. As a result, later on that year, I think, or maybe early the following year, I became a member of his board at the Xavier Society for the Blind. The society has grown in, I think, in its span, in its reach, and certainly in its knowledge in the blind community. You are a very well-known secret. Some of us knew of you, but not as many people knew of you then as know of you now. So having said that, given the fact that you will be taking another assignment in a year and a half or so, or a year, I decided to give you your remarks the title of a interesting book that I read by Carl Jung many years ago. That was the title of his book, and so I thought I'd give you the time to do what you wanted in terms of your memories, your dreams, and reflections. So, ladies and gentlemen, for whatever he cares to remember, to dream, and to reflect on, I give you Father John Sheehan.
Well, Carl took my opening away from me because I was going to start out by saying moment of truth. He was the one who came up with the title of the talk. I think he didn't trust me to come up with one on my own. But it's a good title, and it fits in with what's going on. As Carl said, I am going to be leaving the Xavier Society for the Blind in December of next year. I'm not dead yet. Don't bury me. I've got another 11 or 12 months to cause trouble, and I fully intend to take use of it. But I will have been there for 9 years. And we not only have a board restriction that you can only be on the board for 9 years, but I said to myself, self, if you haven't done it in 9 years, do you think you're going to do it? And I said, no, it's time to move. And so this memories, dreams, and reflections, this really kinds of works. There are still things I hope to accomplish in the time I have left. I haven't given up. I have a few memories to share. There are certainly some dreams and maybe even a reflection. So fasten your seatbelt, kids. Here we go. One of my first memories was I had found the National Federation of the Blind online. I signed up to become a member, and there was a little note that we were going to have a protest march at the Authors Guild against the Kindle and the way they were cutting things off. So I said, well, this sounds like a hoot. So I put on my coat and my hat, and I went out, and I showed up at this march. Now, if you've ever been in a protest march with a group of blind people, the thing they don't tell you is shin guards. I met a lot of interesting people. I had a wonderful time. They even gave me the microphone and let me encourage the march. And then I went home and I bandaged my legs. My next memory, of course, and you know, it's funny, I don't have to explain that. Everybody in the room knows what I'm talking about, right? My next experience with the NFB was Detroit. Remember Detroit, the round hotel? That was when I learned that if you're smart, you follow the blind people. In all the time I was there, I never could find the food court down in the basement. It was in the next building. It was in a different dimension. I don't know. I'd try and get lost. Finally, I figured it out. If I got a person with a white cane who looked hungry, follow them. That was the convention, as Carl said, where we met out in the smoking area. That was the first convention where I ever came across a guide pony. I knew about guide dogs, but I'd never seen a guide pony before. I sat at one of the meetings, I sat a couple of rows behind the guide pony, and it took me back to growing up in the country. I have never understood how the pony can be smart enough to guide you around and yet not smart enough that you could housebreak the creature. You know, they're all wearing these big diapers, but that was a moment. And as I got talking to people at conventions, I learned about the centers. And so once I kind of got settled, I met Pam Allen, and I said, well, what would it cost to go and spend a couple of weeks at the center? Because if I'm going to be dealing with blind people, I should have some experience of this, right? And she said, oh, no charge, you just come. And I said, no, no. I went, no, 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 no charge. You know, Pam Allen is just a treasure. So I went to Louisiana, and I put on sleep shades, and I never took them off, even when I crossed the four-lane highway by accident.
Whoa!
Fortunately, in Ruston, they have a train track that goes through the middle of town, and so traffic has to stop. The only thing that saved my life on that one. I did. I mean, I was crossing from the wood shop back to the main building, and I heard somebody coming toward me, you know, click, click, click. So I veered a little so we wouldn't collide, and the next thing I knew, this is taking a lot longer than it should. And then I ran into a car, and I thought, oh, great, I've made it to the other side of the road. And then I realized the car was facing the wrong way. Oops. Well, obviously, I got back. That was the worst temptation I had, to take off my sleep shades, though I want to tell you. On my last day, I went out for a walk, and my O&M instructor went with me, and he was sighted at that point. I went back and forth with sighted and blind O&M instructors, although at the time I didn't know which was which. And I gave him my camera, and I said, look, take some pictures, you know. And one of the best pictures is there I am in the street, backed up against the back of a car. Yeah, well, you know, it's a learning process, and I take more learning than some others. One of the great memories that I have was riding in a car in Florida, driven by a blind guy. I talk about that all the time, and they say, oh, like the Google car. I said, no, 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 the Google car drives itself. This guy drove that, and I tell them the story about Orlando and driving the track on Orlando, where not only were there obstacles on the track, there was a truck, riding in front of the car, and after a while, they started throwing out boxes at random. And he missed them, and then he got bored, so he passed the truck and brought it on in. The telling part, when Mark Riccobono drove that car, though, the telling part for me was the day before, he went out on the track to try it out, you know, get used to the track and have a dry run. He took his wife and his children with him on the test run. This is a man with confidence. At the convention later that year, you had the opportunity to ride in the car. And I've forgotten what it cost me, but it was worth it. Just to be able to say, I've ridden in the car. You know, it was great. Other memories? Well, when I took over the Xavier Society for the Blind, one of my Jesuit brothers said to me, John, you know, that's a great job for you. And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, you've got a terrific voice, and they don't have to look at you. See how they love one another. But somebody else asked me, he said, John, what are your plans for the Xavier Society for the Blind? And I said, they are not going to go under on my watch. Because at that point, everything was running fine. This was in late 2007, early 2008. The economy was okay. I had 15 staff members who all knew what they were doing. We were chugging along like a well-oiled machine. The only thing I said to myself was, don't touch anything. You'll screw it up. Well, of course, then the economy changed. And I had gotten some very good board members on board. And we realized that while we were not in trouble, we could be very quickly. And so we started to analyze what we were doing and how we were doing it. And we stopped doing large print. I know, boo, hiss, I'm a bad person. But there are so many ways to get large print that I thought we really can't afford to keep doing this. We used to run a large Braille library. We had 3,500 square feet of storage. We had a full-time librarian. We loaned Braille books out. We got Braille books back. Yay! No, boo, that's expensive. It seems counterintuitive, but I ran the numbers. It is cheaper for me to emboss a book, because we've got all of the codes on the computers now, and send it to you. And it's free. We don't charge for any of our services. It's cheaper for me to send you the book and say, please keep it, than to send it back and run a library. Because at any moment, 90% of a library is sitting on the shelf, and that's not getting Braille out into the world. And so I said, send it out. Somebody calls up and says, oh, I really don't have room. Great. Give it to a friend. Take it to a center. Get it out there. We will take it back, obviously, if somebody really can't keep it. But the idea is to get the Braille out into the world. And so I didn't need a library, and I didn't need all of that storage space, and I didn't need those people. I ended up firing 9 people in one day. That was a tough day. 6 of them had 134 years of service with the organization. But as one of my board members said, with love, and we took very good care of them. We really did. Because you know what? We did not have a severance policy at the Xavier Society for the Blind because nobody left. The only people who left died. And they don't get unemployment. Although I hear the government wants to change that. So we cut our staff down, we cut our operations down. We used to have two recording studios and two full-time technicians. And I realized that about 85% of everything we were recording were periodicals, because publishers today are doing their own recordings of books. Or if you're lucky, your Kindle or your Nook or whatever will read to you, or you've got a screen reader. So I said, why are we doing this? So now we have volunteers who read into their home computers. And they've all got recording programs on their home computers, and if they don't, we give them a program and we tell them how to do it. I now have readers. I used to have a great problem scheduling the volunteers into our studios in New York, and if there was a blizzard or I don't care now. I got readers in Arizona. I got readers in Louisiana. I've got one guy in Dublin, Ireland, who reads for us. And they read on their own schedule, and they get things, and so we are now able to do more material faster. And because we don't put it on CDs anymore and send it out, we've saved all that money. We put it up on our website, and people download it. Now, when it first started, we got all sorts of phone calls from clients. Oh, I can't do that. I don't have a computer. I don't know how to. Yeah, fine. Right. We talked them through it. We taught them how to do it. We said, if you don't have a computer, go to the public library. They have computers, and they'd love to show you how to use them. Get your 12-year-old neighbor. He'll take care of it for you. 90% of our audio clients are happily downloading. And I want to tell you how many of them are over 80. And they love it. They think it's a new skill. Now, 5% of our clients wouldn't do it. They refuse to learn. It's too complicated. It's too hard. You've got to take care of me because I'm blind. Yeah, right. Well, you know what my answer to that was? You cannot help people who will not help themselves. And we lost them. Too bad. Good luck. I don't know what they're doing, but they're not here. The other 5% of our people are people, and we've just made a judgment call, the 89-year-old nun in Dubuque, God love her, we put her magazine on a CD and we mail it to her. We don't advertise that, but for about 5% of our clients, we still do that because they've tried and they can't do it, or they're in areas with bad connections, whatever the reason, we take care of them because that's what we do. We try to take care of the people who are willing to take care of themselves. So we've changed. We used to have a 15,000 square foot building. Now we have a 2,500 square foot sublet we are leasing from the American Foundation for the Blind, you know, where Helen Keller worked for all of those years. So it's great. We're in a building with wonderful people. We're all doing the same kind of work. And not only are we saving a lot of money, we have got a very big bank account from when we sold our building. Yay for us. By the way, one of the things at the Xavier Society, and we tried, we really tried on this one. I fired one of our people last week. No, he needed to be fired. If I've made any mistakes as an administrator, there are two people that I should have fired long before I did. I gave them much too much rope, and this was one of them. We're looking to hire somebody, and we took this job apart in six different directions, and it has got to be somebody who's sighted. There's too much outside work and schlepping and doing things. We tried, you know, we really wanted to see if we could make this a job where someone could do it who's blind, and this one simply can't be done. So I apologize for that. We tried, but we've got job descriptions. If anybody knows anybody who's looking for work, we're looking. One of my great memories was our pilgrimages. We did a pilgrimage to the Holy Land. We did a pilgrimage in the footsteps of St. Paul to Greece and Turkey. And in April, we are going to be doing another pilgrimage to Ireland, 9 days in Ireland. If anybody's interested, I have both print and Braille itineraries. If I run out, we can send it to you. It's available on our website. You can download it. It's about $3,800, and that's all inclusive, except, you know, you get the occasional taxes. We take up a collection at the end of the trip for the guide and the bus driver, that sort of thing. If you feel you can't afford it, we do have a raffle. Only 300 tickets printed, $50 a ticket. The first prize is two tickets on the pilgrimage. Airfare, hotels, meals, exhibit entrances, the whole package. Second prize is $1,000, third prize is $500, so you've got a 3 in 300 shot of winning something. And I just happened to have tickets with me. Funny thing about that. There's also an online place. You can buy them online. You go to the web, our web page, and there's a little button you can click, and it takes you right to the site where you buy them. But I mention that not as a sales pitch, because of what we learned. What we learned on those pilgrimages was sighted people who had just signed up because they wanted to go on the trip, most of them had never had any dealings with blind people. And there was a little apprehension, and they very quickly figured out something, that if you're riding in a bus and you're blind, and nobody tells you what's outside the window, you might as well be riding in a bus in Indiana. And so all of the sighted people suddenly figured out they had to be a part of this trip. And everybody took turns. Do you need help going someplace? We had one wonderful guy. He's a great friend of mine. He's been blind since birth. He's a lawyer in Philadelphia, and he's very successful. And his wife was with him, and she's sighted. But the one thing she cannot do for him is take him into the men's room. And so, you know, you get those little basic things. And what we found was that the sighted people found it a much richer trip because they had to be involved in ways that they had never been involved before. On the trip in Greece, it was even more so. And so we're looking forward to the Irish trip. When they first gave me the proposed itinerary for the Irish trip, I gave it back to them and said, no, there's too much time on the bus. We've got to get out and do more things. No long bus rides. Let's break it up more, because we're going to have blind people on the trip. And we have some who have already signed up, so I was right. So that's coming up. Let's see, what else? I took some notes here while I was thinking. We're hiring, we got them. Okay. I could go on with memories for a long time, but I'm supposed to talk about dreams. Well, my first dream is I would like to live long enough to see the Xavier Society for the Blind go out of business. No, because that means there'd be no more blind people. I mean, if you read the scientific reports, they are working now on things that not, you know, they say, well, you know, yeah, but they'll never cure my blindness because, you know, something happened to my cornea or my thing. They are stimulating areas in the brain that are realigning sight. They are not, I mean, they've got extraordinary advances with computer-generated imaging and how they hook into the brain. And at the rate science is progressing, if God grants me enough years, I might well live long enough so that they can remove blindness. Doesn't that sound like an impossible dream? And yet they're working, and the encouraging thing is that so many people in so many countries are working hard to make that possible. It's not one laboratory in Illinois. It's all over the world this work is going on. And so I guess one of my dreams is I'd love to see long enough to get the note that the Xavier Society has closed its doors. I'd like for blind people to become less invisible. One of the things I say when I do talks is that it's very strange that everywhere I go, the deaf, oh God, we've got everything for the deaf. We've got captioning and we've got sign language people. When I first started in this business, there was a mass at St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York. Mass for people with disabilities. So I showed up, gonna concelebrate. They had a ramp so the lady with the wheelchair could get up there and she could read the first reading. They had a translator for the deaf people standing on the altar, translating what was being said. They even had a deaf choir after communion that got up and sang. Not a piece of braille in the whole church. And there were lots of blind people in the church. There were canes and dogs and, you know, forget it. So afterwards, I confronted somebody and I said, hey, you know, I think it's lovely that you don't think the blind are disabled, but come on. And you know what? They were embarrassed. No one had thought of it. They do now, because I'm on their case. Every time there's something comes up, there's a film festival in New York called Real Abilities, and it's a film festival for people with disabilities. And I called them up and I said, what a great idea. Now, which of these movies are described so the blind can enjoy them? Described? What's that? Good. They made a big point of saying that films are captioned, there are wheelchair access, and I said, well, what about the blind? Well, what about them? I was talking to a friend of mine, and this is several years ago, guy who runs a parish, big parish, couple of thousand families, and I was talking to him about the problems of you know, providing material for the blind, and he said, but John, I don't have any blind people in my parish. And I said, you want to bet? Statistically, that's almost impossible. You know what I think? I think either they have adapted so well as they're blind, or they've gone somewhere else where they're made to feel welcome. And he said, oh, wow. Well, look, you send me the material, and I'll make a big sign, and I'll put it up in the back of the church. Education is an ongoing process. I cannot tell you the number of conversations I've had. I'm in a bus coming back from the airport, right? And there's just me and this other businessman. And he says, well, Father, what do you do? I say, well, I run the Xavier Society for the Blind. Well, isn't that fascinating? Now tell me, did you have to learn sign language for that? I have been asked that question more than once. I do have one announcement for those who are in New York. St. Lucy's feast day. St. Lucy is the patron saint of the blind. And in case you like irony and God sticking his hand in, my birthday is the same day as St. Lucy's day. So, well, this year it's December 13th, and this year December 13th is a Sunday. And the last several years since I've been in charge, we've had a special mass at St. Patrick's. Well, this year, because it's Sunday, Sunday takes precedence over the St. Lucy mass. So I contacted Cardinal Dolan months ago, and I said, you know, the Feast of St. Lucy is the 13th of December, and at the cathedral, they will put a focus on something for the Sunday Mass. Like the Sunday Mass before Veterans Day is always about veterans, and they have veterans doing the readings, and there are special reserved sections for veterans. Well, on the 13th of December, the lectors at St. Patrick's Cathedral, the big Mass with the Cardinal, are both going to be blind. The people who bring up the gifts will be blind. There will be orders of worship with the words for the songs, the prayers, the readings in Braille and in large print, and there will be a reserved section in the front of the church for blind people. And if anybody wants to come, let us know so we can make sure they have enough space reserved. Yep, yep, yep. Small triumphs, small triumphs. I'm still on dreams. I have another dream. I'd like there to be work. That's a dream. I would like more and more people to realize that with minimal accommodations, there is a great pool of talent out there that is available for them if they would only go after it. And in that same thing, I absolutely agree. I would like to see this shameful relic of another age of sub-minimum wage disappear into the history books. Things that I want to do, I guess, fall under dreams. We have a big archives. We've been around since 1900 at the Xavier Society for the Blind, and I'm talking to producers about doing a film. And we've got so much material, the script could go a lot of ways. It could be a history of blind communication. But we want to use this, film it, and then give the material to Perkins or to the American Printing House, both of whom have great museums. It's silly for this material to be sitting in a warehouse and not doing anything. So I want to get that movie at least shot, if not edited or cut or scripted, and that's one of the things I want to do this year. I want to do a retreat for blind people. Dr. Maurer suggested this to me 2 years ago, and I said, didn't particularly ring my bell, but everybody I've talked to says, what a great idea! Okay, got the message. So we're going to try to do that this year. I'll tell you another one that I would like to do, and it's been mentioned here. I would like blind organizations to be more conscious of taking care of blind people. Now, I know Mindy has said there are some complaints that are going to be addressed, and I go, yay. But I also wonder, and there was a statement made yesterday, why do we have to wait until something goes wrong to complain for it to be right? You know? And that it takes place in organizations of the blind for the blind is sort of sad. And I got another hobby horse I'm going to ride here for about 30 seconds. I know, Carl, I'll shut up. But I would like to see NFB and the ACB stop this absolutely stupid practice of combining about scheduling their conventions at the same time. There are those of us who attend both. And to have the national conventions at exactly the same time is really stupid and short-sighted, and it's got to stop, and I blame both sides equally. You know what's going on in White Plains this weekend? The ACB New York State Convention. And it's hard enough for us who want to go there. But if you're a vendor and you want to reach out to the blind community, it's a very, very tough thing. This summer, where are you going to go, Minneapolis or Orlando? It's not like it's a bus ride away. Well, last summer I went to the NFB because it was Mark Riccobono's first year and it was the 75th. This summer I will be in Minneapolis. And because of the schedule, I cannot do both. Next year, if the state conventions are at the same time, I will be at ACB. Right. Now, I've got my staff, Christine, who was here last year because I was out of the country. Christine is at ACB, and she's representing the Xavier Society because we want to be present. But I can't be present in two places at once. I mean, I'm a Jesuit. I can do a lot of things. But two places at once is not one of them. You know. And I think it is time that this stupid, absolutely stupid rivalry stops. The ACB is different. It has a different personality. It operates differently. And it reaches a lot of people who resonate to that. Terrific! And then there are those of us who love both. And I don't know why we can't do both. All right, I'm done. Now, wait a minute. Wait, I've still got reflections, and I've only got a minimal reflection. But I was talking to a woman last week, and she had been with us on our pilgrimages. And I hadn't talked to her in this way for a while, and we had a long lunch together. And she said that being on the pilgrimages with the blind people, if I can say it that way, changed her life. I said, well, what do you mean? She said, well, she was walking down the hall one day, and there was a woman who was traveling solo. She was blind. And she said, who's there? And she said, Eileen, can you help me? Sure. So Eileen came in the room, and this woman had spent 40 minutes crawling around on her hands and knees on the floor in her stateroom trying to find the plug so she could plug in her computer. The plug was waist high over the desk. She'd never experienced that before. Eileen said, wow. We were on Mykonos, a Greek island, and Mykonos is known, among other things, for windmills. And they talked about windmills, and we had a whole big day about windmills. And that night, Eileen was sharing a room with this woman, and she turned out the light, and they're settling down to go to sleep. And this other woman says, Eileen, can I ask you a question? And Eileen says, sure. What is it, Teresa? She said, what's a windmill? Blew her away. Just, you assume that little bit of knowledge, and in that case, it wasn't right. The people on our trips get over pity very quickly, if they start there at all, and they move swiftly to admiration, and then appreciation, because the trips for them got much more meaningful, much richer, because we all had to share what we were seeing, what we were doing, sometimes what was happening with our travel companions. I will tell you at this point, I have no idea what my next assignment will be. The military vicariate has asked if I would go back into service as a contract chaplain with the Marines. The University of Notre Dame has talked to me about going back as a hall rector. With my kind of luck, I will probably be hit by a truck and end up in the province infirmary. Hey, you know, I keep thinking God has got a wicked sense of humor, right? After all of my years, he's either going to take my eyes. So, you know, it's like, all right, put into practice what you've learned, which would be all right, you know. Or he'll take my voice so I can't sing or talk, and wouldn't that be awful? But whatever I do, wherever I go, my biggest reflection is how much, like my friend at lunch the other day, how much my life has changed. Because I got this job at the Xavier Society, and it has changed my life. Because I got to know the NFB. And for reasons entirely different than many of you, but the NFB has changed my life. And because of the people I've gotten to know here in New York and around the country, you, in all sorts of ways that I can never repay, but I will always love, you have changed my life. So as we say in the trade, God bless you.
And God bless you. Father, we begin.
And Father, God bless you too.
And I have horse race tickets.
Yes, he's back to being a bookie.